Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Whether there is life beyond our planet, it's an intriguing question we won't be able to answer definitively, but we can tell you what the latest thinking is on the subject. A conference is being held at the University of Missouri-St. Louis Friday and Saturday, bringing together some top scientists to talk about astrobiology, life beyond Earth. Joining me to talk about it is Dr. Erica Gibb, professor and chair of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. So nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
You know, I don't think there are too many subjects that generate the kind of conversation that this one does. And it's been doing so for a long, long time. It's a fun subject, you say.
Yes, it's a very fun subject.
Well, but it's serious too.
Yes.
Where are we in assessing the probability of the potential for life beyond our own planet?
Well, I suppose that depends on who you talk to. We've made some really great strides lately detecting evidence, solid evidence for water on Mars. We've got evidence for liquid water in the outer solar system. As far as we know, that's one of the fundamental things you need for life, liquid water. We've detected hundreds of exoplanets. That's planets around other stars in our galaxy. And we are even at the point where we've started to detect some of their atmospheres and have determined that some of those also have liquid water. So we aren't there yet as far as answering the question, but it really does look like at least some of the fundamental things that you need seem to be widespread in the universe. So we're pretty optimistic that there's life somewhere else.
Do you personally believe there is?
I want to say yes. And as a scientist, I have to use the caveat that I don't have any evidence to back that up. However, organic molecules and water are very widespread, and I don't necessarily think there are aliens flying around our galaxy, but I would be very surprised if there weren't at least microbial life on other planets in our galaxy.
Why is water so important? I mean, we hear it, obviously it is, you say it is, and I certainly believe you with your credentials, but why is it?
Well, we think fundamentally you need to be able to make complex molecules. Carbon is a really good atom as far as its ability to make complex molecules, but you also need a solvent. You need a way for molecules to move around, and water is a fabulous solvent. There could be other solvents. Some people suggest that liquid ethane or methane oceans on Titan might serve as a solvent, but water is an excellent solvent, and it's very common in the universe and very common in our solar system.
You mentioned Mars and that we are now certain that there is water, was or is water, ice, whatever, on Mars. Why are we so certain?
Well, both. It was wet in the past, and there is permafrost under the surface, and some of the evidence for liquid water in the past comes from certain minerals that on Earth only form in the presence of liquid water. So there are those. There are craters that look like they have mud splashed around them. So when whatever hit it and made that crater, it liquefied some water under the surface. There's also been these flows in crater walls that have changed. We've got spacecraft orbiting Mars, and short-term changes between one image of a region and another image of a region that look like sort of a flash flood flow down the wall of a crater. And then the polar ice caps, while they tend to seasonally be dry ice, carbon dioxide, there is frozen water there as well. But the atmosphere is too low density right now for liquid water to be stable on the surface.
And we've also had devices that we've actually put on the planet. Has that further prove that water exists or existed there?
Yeah, so a lot of the evidence that we have come from either the landers. Yeah. We've been landing, the Viking landers were, 1976, I believe. And
we have several
rovers on the surface. So right now, one of those rovers is going around zapping rocks and finding more evidence for, again, usually chemicals that formed in the presence of water. There isn't liquid water directly on the surface right now, as far as we can tell, but beneath the surface. So, yeah, those rovers are where a lot of our evidence comes from.
How often are you and yours, your colleagues, able to check in on what the rovers are producing by way of information?
Well, if you're actually on the rover team, I'm sure you're checking in every single day. They do have pretty common press releases. So NASA's website, nasa.gov, if you go there and look up the various, basically any mission they have going, you can see what news releases they've had in recent past.
Where does the water come from, or did the water come from on a planet like Mars?
Well, that's a good question, and that's actually one of the things we're trying to answer right now. So there's a lot of water in our solar system, but if you look, the terrestrial planets, that's the rocky planets like Earth, Venus, Mars, they are very low in water if you look at their overall composition. But if you look at the outer solar system, the moons of the giant planets and comets and even asteroids, they're very water rich. So we think that the water and organics on Earth may have been delivered early in the solar system's history by asteroids and by comets. And that's one of the things that my research is directly related to. There's a type of water called deuterated water. Hydrogen has a proton in its nucleus. Deuterated water is a proton and a neutron, so it's heavier. And the deuterated water is actually pretty rare. There's not very much of it. But the ratio of how much of that heavy water there is compared to regular water changes depending on where you are in the solar system. So one of the things we're doing is we're looking at water in comets and trying to see if the amount of that heavy water is the same as it is in Earth's oceans.
And what have you learned?
So far what we've learned is it ranges from a little bit less than what's in our oceans to up to three times more. So we're still working on it, trying to figure out what the range is in comets. But it looks like at least they may have contributed. Maybe it's not the dominant source if we continue to find a lot more of that heavy water in comets. But in the asteroids, it's also somewhat similar to Earth's oceans. So it's probably a combination of asteroids and comets.
What sort of a community do you have, not necessarily just at UMSL, but at other institutions where people are doing the same kind of research, to compare notes so that you don't have a lot of people doing the same thing?
Well, having at least a few people doing the same thing is good. It lets other people check what you do. But there are a lot of collaborations. There's an astrobiology program that NASA funds. There are several astrobiology groups. There's a strong one at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. There are ones at NASA Ames, University of Hawaii, upstate New York at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. So there are a lot of groups, and we get together periodically and compare our results and try to figure out what other people are doing and, you know, what do we need to do next.
I had seen something in the not-too-distant past suggesting that Dr. Stephen Hawking and I believe it was a Russian are putting together something like $100 million to assist in the study of this sort of thing. Is that am I remembering incorrectly, or do you know about that?
I haven't heard of that, actually. Yeah.
That there are some private grants out there that apparently would assist people like yourself. You might want to look into it, Eric.
Hey, $100 million. I'm going to look that up.
it's nothing to sneeze at. You say that that the best we can probably hope for is some sort of microbial life. Is that correct?
Well, I hope that's not the best we can hope for. I hope there's more complex life, but I think it's more likely that if we do find something, the first thing we'd probably find would be simple microbial life.
And what would that tell us? What would that mean?
Well, it would mean there's the potential for more complex life out there. I mean, ultimately, in sci-fi, right, you want to go out and maybe you want to connect with life that's out there. But I think it would just be very exciting, this fundamental idea that there is other life in the universe, not just on our planet. I mean, right now, our planet's the only place we know of that has life.
And what do we know about how life evolved on our planet?
Well, we know that it started very simple. We know that it started pretty early after it could. So in the early part of the solar system, there was a lot of material that was bombarding the planets. So we were getting hit by asteroids regularly, asteroids that would wipe out Earth if they hit, you know, wipe all life on Earth if it hit today. But the earliest evidence for life comes from very shortly after that bombardment sort of subsided. And so life seemed to get started pretty early. It seems to have taken quite a while to get from single-celled organisms. So the earliest evidence is about 3.5 to 3.85 billion years old for single-celled. And it didn't really become multicelled until only a few hundred million years ago. So that's 3+ billion years of just being microbial life, which is part of the reason why I think that's the most likely thing to find. We'd probably want to talk to a biologist about the more details about how life evolved. But from an astronomy standpoint, which is my area of expertise, we know it started pretty much as soon as conditions on Earth allowed for it.
The conditions on Earth being that would allow for it being?
Warm liquid water on the surface.
Well, warm heat is a key ingredient in all of that. How warm is it on Mars?
Well, right now it's pretty cold, although the warmest summer day on Mars would be a reasonably comfortable 40 or 50 degrees Fahrenheit. It was probably much warmer in the distant past. It probably had a thicker atmosphere. It probably had liquid water on the surface in the distant past, which is one of the reasons why we're so fascinated with searching for maybe not life now, but at least maybe fossilized evidence that there was life in the past on Mars.
That's going to be pretty hard to detect with a telescope.
Right. We definitely want to go there.
Yeah. And well, we are going. Within the next decade, we're going to go. We had talked a little bit before going on the air. That's a trip that you wouldn't particularly care to make, I take it.
No. It's probably a one-way trip. Yeah. And there's too many things on this planet that I don't want to leave behind. So as exciting as a trip to Mars might be, I don't think I'd want it to be permanent.
But certainly you want to be plugged into whatever those folks who do make the trip find when they get there.
Oh, absolutely.
That's right. We're talking with Dr. Erica Gibb, chair of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. We're going to come back and continue the conversation. We'd like you to be a part of it. And if you would like to be, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you would prefer to send us a tweet, we'll take that at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Erica Gibb. Erica, you mentioned earlier on that one of the important things that you're looking for are other planets. So what do you call them?
Exoplanets.
Exoplanets. That is, planets that have a star much like our sun is to here.
Correct.
Why is it so important to find them? Why is a planet necessary? And why is an exoplanet necessary?
So an exoplanet just is a planet outside our solar system. And we think you need a warm surface environment with liquid water if you're going to detect life. At least it's more likely that way. We don't actually know what the limitations are. So you would want to look for signs of planets around other stars. You want to look for planets that are in what we call the Goldilocks zone, so far enough away from their planet that they're not being roasted by or from the star, that they're not being roasted by the star, but close enough that they're not completely frozen. And that might be the best likelihood for detecting life outside our solar system.
There are a lot of them out there, apparently.
There are probably thousands or millions. We've discovered hundreds and hundreds of them so far, and we're discovering more every year. In fact, almost every day.
We have a number of people who want to get into this conversation. Let's bring them in. I'll start with John, who's calling from Hazelwood. John, thank you for waiting. You're on the air with Dr. Erica Gibb.
Thank you. I was wondering what the doctor's view would be on the Fermi paradox. This is a paradox which stated by Enrico Fermi quite a while back that, you know, of the billions of stars in the galaxy and the probability that all that some of them have planets, which we've discovered that they do, those planets do exist, and the probability of, you know, some life and the probability of intelligent life, and, you know, it comes pretty close to being, you know, on a probability basis that there is intelligent life out there, but the paradox is why haven't we heard from them? And I have some thoughts on that myself, but I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Okay, so there's an equation called the Drake equation, which, as you said, takes the star formation rate in our galaxy, and then you multiply it by the probabilities that you'd have planets, what fraction of those planets might have life, what fraction of those lead to intelligence, etc. And you end up with how many civilizations there are in the galaxy. So we've got a good handle on how many stars are formed in our galaxy. We've got a pretty good handle now on what fraction of those have planets. It's more than half. A pretty good handle we're starting to get on how many planets you form in any given system. But there's still a huge amount of uncertainty in what is the probability for life, which I think is fairly high, at least for microbial life. But then there's this issue of what is the probability of getting intelligent life, and then what's the probability for that life to develop a technology? And those, we have a sample of one. That's us. So we really have no idea what those probabilities are. So you can get widely ranging estimates for how much life should be out there. I do this as an exercise for my introductory astronomy students. And the numbers vary wildly from maybe it's just us to there's millions and millions of technological civilizations. So there's that. I mean, this is one of those things we love to debate, but we really don't have the answer. But also, when it comes to talking to civilizations, let's see. So you could communicate. You can't communicate any faster than the speed of light. So it's possible that if there are aliens out there, that they would know that we're here because of the effects life has on our atmosphere. Oxygen. Oxygen's very reactive. It's not stable long term unless it's continually being replenished. But if you go and say, okay, well, how would they know there's a technology here? Well, we leak radio waves into space. But we've only been leaking radio waves into space for just under a century. And that means that radiation has only gotten maybe 100 light years away from Earth, which sounds like a big distance. It's not. Our galaxy is 100,000 light years across. And so only life in the very innermost solar neighborhood of the galaxy could have a hint that we're here talking. So it might be that they just don't know we're here yet if they're out there. Plus, space is huge. There's a huge amount. I mean, it's really hard to imagine. There's a huge amount of space between stars. Travel probably wouldn't be very easy. And unless there's an awful lot of life out there, an awful lot of aliens traveling over our galaxy, random chance of them finding us is probably pretty small. So sorry I can't be more definitive, but that's the nature of this particular field of research right now.
My thoughts are that maybe civilizations might only last, you know, a few thousand years, so that, you know, that's a blink of an eye in terms of the time that the universe has existed. So, you know, the fact that, you know, we might cross paths, I mean, you'd have to be within their window and they'd have to be within our window. And it just, you know, even though there might have been millions of civilizations, if they only exist for 10,000 years, I mean, you know, for example, but the chances of being at the right time frame to coexist would be very small. So that's one thought that I had.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's another critical component. If they destroy themselves or their environment before they can travel out into space or communicate, then, yeah, we wouldn't ever know that they were there.
You know, you said we've had radio wave, we've only been able to transmit for less than 100 years, and we're already looking at, you know, sort of climactic change and disaster on our planet within the next 100 years or so. So, yeah.
John, thank you so much for the call. Erica, as a scientist, do you blanch at all when people start talking about aliens, the little green men, or whatever you want to call them, or however you want to characterize them?
I actually enjoy discussing the possibility that they might exist. Yeah. However, to say anything definitively and to claim that they have visited us without proof, that kind of causes me to flinch. As a scientist, I like evidence. Mm-hmm. But also, as a scientist who studies astrobiology, I do love to discuss the possibility of aliens.
What do you make of the movies that become so popular, as many have? I mean, The Martian is one that recently came out with Star Wars. I mean, there are a million of them, 2001, for instance. What do you make of that and the impact that they have on folks?
I really like science fiction. I don't know if that's just because I really like science, but I do love science fiction. I do like those movies. I think that they make people aware of science and excited about science. The Martian, I think, did a really good job with that, of getting people excited about this idea of maybe going to Mars and how difficult it would be to survive long-term on another planet. So I think those movies do a really good job of getting people excited and aware.
One of the questions that always comes up in a discussion like this is that we tend to think that if there is life beyond our realm here, that it would pretty much have to be like us and have the same kinds of qualities that we have. I mean, we breathe air. Why couldn't another culture, another society breathe carbon monoxide, for instance, or breathe some other gas that would kill us immediately? Are we a little bit arrogant in our thinking along those lines?
Well, perhaps a little bit. But also, we try to think outside the box as much as possible, and there are certainly scientists who do that. But this is the one example we have, and we know it works. And so we have a tendency to expect more life to be like us. Breathing oxygen certainly isn't required. Microbial life, especially in the beginning, oxygen was a byproduct that was poisonous to them. Like, we gave off carbon dioxide, they gave off oxygen. And so you certainly don't need to breathe oxygen. I discussed maybe you don't need liquid water. Maybe you could use ethane or methane. But we do know that at least this combination that life ended up with on Earth works. And so we do have a tendency to try to look for those kinds of environments elsewhere.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Susan joins us from the Metro East. Susan, go ahead. You're on the air with Dr. Gibb.
Yeah. Good morning, Dr. Gibb.
Good morning.
Great to hear you both. In high school, I had fun doing astronomy projects, and among other things, I would make pictures of Mars with long, big green canals. And I was wondering if you could talk about the weather past on Mars and the geography past on Mars, and are amateurs invited to the conference?
Okay, so let me see if I can remember to address all of those. So the past on Mars, we believe it was much warmer and much wetter in the past with a much thicker carbon dioxide atmosphere. We do have some evidence that it's lost most of its atmosphere. It's not protected by a magnetic field like Earth is. So solar radiation can get in there and break molecules apart. It's been losing its atmosphere. Its atmosphere is now only about 1% as thick as Earth's atmosphere. So it was much warmer and wetter in the past. As far as the surface goes, it's got a surface that, half of it is very cratered. Another half of it is covered with these giant volcanoes, the biggest volcano in the solar system, is on Mars. And so it has a very interesting ratio of geology versus very old cratered surfaces. There have been some evidences of liquid flows on the surface. So that's the past. And right now it's pretty bone dry and seems to be geologically dead. As far as the conference, it's open to the public. Anybody who's interested in learning more about astrobiology is welcome to come. There is a registration page through umsl.edu at the physics department. There's a link off the physics department website. Registration is $25 for the general public. And if you happen to be a student, either a high school student or a college student, it's a $10 registration fee. And that covers coffee breaks and lunch. And there's a free planetarium show as well and parking on the UMSL campus.
We will put a link to yours on our website at stlpublicradio.org. We had a caller who couldn't wait while we're talking about Mars. He asks, isn't there 3,000 feet of ice at the poles of Mars?
Honestly, I don't remember how thick the Martian polar layer is. But yes, there is a Martian polar ice cap. It does vary in thickness seasonally. So the carbon dioxide part of it vaporizes during Martian summer and refreezes out during Martian winter. I'm sorry, I don't remember how thick it is.
That's okay. Your excuse. Well, we seem to be preoccupied with Mars. Is that because of its proximity or because we know of certain conditions there that could potentially support life?
Probably a little bit of both. It's the easiest planet to get to and to get to its surface. I mean, Venus is close, but Venus is also hot enough to melt lead on its surface. So not exactly a place you can visit easily. But also we know that there was liquid water, and that's what we're looking for. If you want to think of likely places for life, you want to follow the water.
One is, again, going back to your conference, one of the things I've noticed about the participants is everyone seems, with one or two exceptions perhaps, every one of your speakers seems to be quite young. And I find that interesting in these days when there's so much concern about the STEM disciplines and the fact that young people today don't seem to be too interested in going in that direction. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, as far as our students go, I think there's plenty of interest, especially in astronomy, among young scientists. We have not exclusively young scientists, but yes, I did invite some of the younger scientists. We've got two from NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, a couple of scientists from Missouri State University and UMSL and Washington University and the University of Illinois. I mean, maybe there's a general trend against hard sciences, but when you do get students interested in science, they tend to be very passionate about it.
Do you have any concerns, given the fact that concerns are being expressed, that the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math, are kind of being cast aside?
I do. Yeah. I'm a little concerned about the loss, and actually particularly the loss of young women who tend to drop out of science. Even in middle school, that's where we start losing girls interested in science. That's nothing new. That's been a problem for a long time. And the preparedness of science, really, you want to get those kids interested in science in elementary school and not portray science as being very hard. And I really think STEM in elementary and middle and high school needs to be strengthened, because if they've got a good background when they get to college, they could do anything they wanted.
Is there any kind – we have to wind this down, but is there any kind of a timetable that you're thinking of with regard to astrobiology and learning some of the things that you're so interested in learning? Do we have to wait for a mission to Mars to actually land there before we can come up with more definitive information and conclusions?
Well, do we need to land there? If you want to actually detect life on Mars – you probably need a lot of landers to explore a big surface. But as far as astrobiology goes, there are people who are trying to figure out how life might start under Martian environments by using a lab on Earth. And there's all kinds of things people are doing on Earth As far as telescopes go, we do study Mars's atmosphere with telescopes from the ground or telescopes like the Hubble Space Telescope. So there's a lot we can do from Earth. We don't have to do all our work by spacecraft.
Well, I was going to bring up the issue of telescopes. I mean, I had indicated before, kind of half-joking, that there's a lot you can't see with a telescope because of distance. But they do have the capacity to provide a lot of very useful information, I gather.
Yes, they do.
Not just pretty pictures.
Right. So a lot of what we know about the Mars atmosphere comes from ground-based spectroscopy using telescopes like those on Mauna Kea, Hawaii.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, and I'm sure it's going to be a most interesting conference. I hope it goes very well for it. And thank you so much for being with us and sharing your expertise with us. Any final thought you'd like to leave us with?
No, just encourage you to register for that conference if you're interested in coming, and thank you for having me.
Okay, well, the information is on our website. That's Professor Erica Gibb, Chair of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Thank you again for being with us. A reminder that Astrobiology and Life Beyond Earth Conference is this Friday and Saturday at UMSL. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.